back with episode 807 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and guys, we promise this time we are actually going to get to talk about shows, so I'll just throw the disclaimer right here. We go through every spoiler there possibly is because we think they're all really cool, so if you want to be spoiled, keep on listening, and if you don't want to be spoiled, wait till you see the show and then come back and then get spoiled again.
That's right. And so we are going to be getting into quite a lot of discussion, I think, tonight. Let's see, how many shows were there? There were 23 shows, 23 episodes. We scored 22 of them.
Is that all?
Yeah, that's all.
So that's the equivalent of about 20 plus hours of shows.
Yep. All right. But that means that we have a clear bottom three and a clear top three. And then there are some other shows in between that are worthy of discussion. So we're going to go ahead and start here at the bottom three. And, there are some interesting shows on this particular list. Starting with Supergirl, Season 2, Episode 20, City of Lost Children. When an alien attacks National City, Supergirl and the DEO team learn the alien is a Forian, an otherwise peaceful race with telekinetic powers. And this one came in at an average of 7.25. And, Gary, you thought that this one was pretty average here.
Yeah, it was, and I almost feel guilty when I don't put in a really good score for a comic book based television show, but it didn't earn it this time. It really didn't. The villain, which was the alien, turned out that they were being acted upon by the B-plot villain, and so it was pretty much a wash for the actual alien part of it, which the summary talks about. Which the summary doesn't talk about is how the reason the alien was acting weird was because Mon-El's mother was working with Lena Luthor to develop a space portal, and it was causing the alien's telepathy to go nuts. So, which was, I guess, is the better story, so to speak. But at the same time, I just cannot get behind Terry Hatcher's character as this as the villain of, you know, Mon-El's mother and evil and bad, and I just can't get into it. I really don't think it's a prejudice for any of her other roles that she's been in. It's just not working for me at all, and it just seems really trite, and I just can't grasp a hold of it. So that's really what dragged it down for me. That plus the fact that I don't quite understand why she's having a hard time developing the technology when she must have all the plans to begin with. So it kind of seems like how much of this is developing versus paint by numbers for as far as this portal goes. So, again, it just, you know, once they solve the, just build the portal. Here's the plans. Make it happen. So I just don't get this quote, oh, we're working on developing type stuff that Lena keeps mentioning. It just seems to fall yet another hole in this episode. John, you thought a little bit better. Did you think a little bit better? Yeah, you thought a little bit better of it. And, you know, what's working for you that just isn't working for me in this episode? Because I want to like this show, but this episode just left me blah.
I'm really honestly just the end.
Okay.
That was what did it, was that it set up a nice last couple episodes for the season. Because otherwise, yes, the entire episode, the majority of it felt very underwhelming. And if it wasn't for the fact that it hooked me at the very end, I might have written this off as almost filler at this stage of the game. I really just, James and his whole Guardian thing is not working for me this season. It's I think a pretty weak subplot. And yeah, it just, this was so focused on that we barely got any of Kara and Supergirl at all. So I don't, and Terry Hatcher, yeah, you know, she's very arch and all. It kind of is just putting Lena in a very interesting position where she's kind of second fiddle, not really a villain. It just, I don't know. It's very strange the way that's all parsing out.
And at this point, I don't think we're ever going to see, what's his name? The father Danvers together against the Mon-El's mother. Mm. They must know we want that to happen.
Well, if they know that we want that to happen, it's just not going to.
Yeah, I suppose so. But we can still hope. It'd be nice to have some scene of something. Yes. Yeah. So, geez, how many things we're gonna cross tonight?
Supergirl just really not hitting the mark this time around, unfortunately. Also not hitting the mark is Designated Survivor, Season 1, Episode 19, Miss Alliance. As the White House gears up for President Kirkman's first international summit, Kimball Cook-Stratton faces her toughest political battle yet when her speakership is challenged. And yeah, I gave this a 7, dead average 7. It's the political, you know, aspiration type of material is its own. It seems like it kind of exists almost in its own weird little bubble. And then there's all the stuff that's, you know, surrounding the conspiracy and those action subplots, and they're in a different bubble. And it feels like they're not the same bubble, or the show is not, you know, they're two different bubbles on two different shows rather than two parts of the same show. It's just not feeling as cohesive as it has before. And I've said that a few times now, and it's not getting any better, unfortunately. Also coming in at an average of 7 is Class Season 1, Episode 4, Co-Owner of a Lonely Heart. April struggles to control herself after events at the prom, and Dorothea introduces herself as the new head teacher of Coal Hill Academy. Yeah, it's just... it's odd that the, you know, supposedly more teen-set, youth-oriented spin-off of Doctor Who is more sexually explicit than anything we've actually seen on Doctor Who. And Doctor Who had freaking Jack Harkness on it. So it's really weird. I know that teenagers, of course, are going to be a little more active, perhaps, at certain, you know, in certain respects, but it's like, really? Okay, this is a Doctor Who spinoff, and it's a little racy compared to Doctor Who. Not that Doctor Who is usually anything but a dork, but it just comes off a little bit odd. It's like, all right.
Well, do you think they're trying to go after, like, the CW shows when they're doing something like this, where, you know, there is a lot of overt sexuality in them?
It's possible, because they've actually name-dropped some of that in the past.
Oh.
In the very first episode, for instance, they have an extended conversation about the Vampire Diaries, so it's possible. It's just a little bit odd to me that it just feels like, at the same time that it's more cheesy than Doctor Who tends to be, and that's saying a lot, it also pushes some of those boundaries a little bit more, and it's a weird and almost uncomfortable feeling. It's like, I don't know. If it's going to be related to Doctor Who, I don't want it to push too many of those boundaries, you know, in a very strange way.
Hun, now, you know, this is a BBC show, and it's not BBC America, so this is being done for English audiences as well, correct?
Yeah.
So could it be a cultural issue that they're you know, a little bit more blatant about the sexuality because it's not America?
It's possible, I suppose, but I mean, Doctor Who itself is also a BBC show. Torchwood, even to a certain extent, went, you know, definitely pushed things a lot more. So it's maybe it's just the presentation and the way that it's coming across, because it's just, you know, Torchwood, for all its kind of almost juvenile way of handling things, was supposed to be a more adult-oriented show. For this to kind of just be like, oh, it pushes things in like the almost even further than Buffy may have and things of that nature. And I'm just being very maybe weirdly puritanical about this show, because oddly, I don't think that I really have too many problems with people pushing boundaries anywhere else. It's just this show, it felt really odd to me. Maybe because it was such a direct line to Doctor Who. But it was just not... it's not a very well-put-together show sometimes. And in this case, it just feels like, first of all, it's the first half of a story, and it just doesn't seem to be coming together the way that I was hoping that it would be. It feels sometimes like it wants to be Buffy meets Doctor Who, and then sometimes it feels like it aspires to it and misses the mark. But... unfortunately, that wound up at the bottom of our list. 7, still, again, it's average. Mediocre, perhaps, one might say, but average. It's not horrible, it's just not really making waves. But we have shows that go all the way up to the top of the chart, so... yeah, it's in company that is rarefied. We had quite a few shows that were in the top marks this week, so... our top 3 is pretty highly scored. For instance, our first show on our top 3, our number 3 show for the week, is Agents of Hydra, Season 4, Episode 21.
Didn't go back at this episode.
Ah, an even deadlier enemy looms in the wake of the team's victory in the framework. It did and didn't, to a certain degree. Mm. This one came in at an average of 9.17, and Gary, you really like this one.
Oh yeah, this was you know, great. They you know, they got out of the framework. We see now I'll say Ada, even though I don't even know what name she's going at by now. Is now fully human. Not only that, but she is she has multiple inhuman powers. As they were doing the searching, I guess, in the framework world for to research all this, they managed to decode how to implant a variety of powers into Ada's new human form. So now she's really an uber villain. She's she's now spurned from Fitz, which I was really impressed and surprised that turned around. I thought Fitz was going to be in some sort of dark emotional hole for episodes to come. And the fact that they bounced him out of it this quickly I enjoyed it very much, but at the same time, it was a shock. I thought they would take it much further along. It was so nice to have that scene with Gemma towards the end. Oh gosh! That was such a beautiful scene. And but still, it took me by surprise. So now Ada's spurned, and she wants to get revenge on everyone. And you really got an insane possessed villain. And I don't know that we've really had one of those in this show. We've had these Hydra plotting this, planning this, really long games type of plans for everything, and now we get a guy that's we get this woman who's just bonkers and just wants someone dead just because they've wronged her, and it's definitely a different flavor of villain, and it might help again to continue to mix things up. I'm not sure how they're going to handle her exactly, but it's, as you said, John, it's, they've really picked up things towards this last part of this season, and thankfully it won't be the last now. So I doubt they've had time to rewrite anything. I'm sure everything's in the can already, so to speak, or the hard drive. But I hope they left a little opening so we're not starting from scratch next season.
Yeah, I really hope so, too. I think that maybe they had more of an inkling that they were coming back than perhaps the general masses did. At least I'm hoping so. But it's really not that hard for them, even if they put a pretty hard stop on things, to just pick back up. I don't think I get the sense that they are doing their, last few things where they're going to wrap everything up into a tidy little bow and then have to try and figure out how to walk back from that. That's just not the way that it seems to be going. Edmund gave this one a 9 and said, "Well done exploration of the consequences and after effects of living dual lives and the psychic wounds inflicted. And amused to see the lengths some shows will go to keep Zach McGowan, the genre's hunk du jour, on screen as much as possible." he has really, since he started off, I guess he really came to our attention on Black Sails, but he's been in like this show, he's been on the 100. He seems to be really kind of kicking off a real career in the genre, to say the least. I also gave it a 9, and I really thought I knew where this episode was going. And then they had that really extended scene with Fitz and Ada / Ophelia when they were in captivity, and Simmons is listening over, and
he's
just crushed. And it felt like the episode had really, like, a full episode had already played out. And then he drops that whole bomb that the whole time he's talking about the future and everything, that it's about Simmons, and the whole thing just goes nuts.
Yeah. Oh,
wow. Okay. This is perfect. This is exactly what this show should be doing. And yeah, when he's standing there screaming at people saying, you don't understand. She's going to kill us all. You can't stop her. And everyone's like, no, she'll be fine. She'll be fine. And then it just goes so wrong.
Yeah. Dead.
Yeah. It was, it was a lot of stuff happening, and yeah, how they're going to wrap this up in one episode, I have no idea. It's going to be very interesting to see. Do you have any speculation at all about how you think they're going to wrap this up or be able to beat her?
Let's see. We could go for the crazy answer, and Mac comes out of the coma and shoots her. we could go for the they come up with some way to negate her powers. That might be an option. I don't know if they can pull it off, but I wonder if Fitz could talk her down.
That would be an interesting way to go.
So we'll have to see. I'm not sure which of the three. Or Coulson could just shoot her in the head. It depends how neat and tidy they want to make this. So we'll have to see.
Yeah, Coulson just flat out shooting or killing somebody in the finale is certainly, it's not the first time that he would have done it.
Yeah. So, I would hope that they have Fitz talking her out of it. So we'll have to see. It wouldn't be the first time they've had somebody change alliances. So wouldn't that be nice? I don't know. Could they actually bring her in as a team member after all she's done?
Probably not.
So, but yeah, maybe he can talk her out of it.
Let's see. Next in our number 2 slot, we have Arrow, season 5, episode 20, underneath, things get intense when Oliver and Felicity are trapped in the bunker together. And this one also came in at an average of 9.17. Nadim gave it a 9.5, which is actually pretty darn impressive. Gary, you gave it a 9. What was your...
My shipping fantasy came back true again. No, it was nice to see them back together again, and not, there's been such a distance between them after the engagement was broken up and they came back to Star City, and, he became the Arrow again. It just started wedging and wedging until finally they broke up. And then when she joined that hacker group, it just more of a wedge got put in between them. And it was well-written and well-played out that, geez, you just felt like they're not even growing so far apart, but pushing themselves away from each other, that it was nice to have them actually trapped together and have to talk out some things that were going on. And I don't know, short of getting themselves locked in a room like this, that they would, either one of them would have ever had this conversation. So I was glad that it happened. I felt that it definitely made progress in their relationship, and I'm still amazed how secure Cisco made that bunker.
Yeah, considering how many people just walk in and out of the headquarters for the Arrow, it's a pretty secure bunker when all is said and done. I was really surprised that they went there. I was not expecting them to go back to Felicity anytime soon. They had really kind of put that, to bed, I thought. And then the next thing you know, there is actually, a pretty strong episode here that delves into the possibilities that still exist. And I wasn't really expecting that. But there's been some really nice unexpected things that are happening here at the end of the fifth season. What do you think? I mean, do you think that this is going to be a complete turnaround? Or is it just... do you feel like maybe the writers are toying with the Oliver Felicity fans at this point? Or do you really think that this whole thing was a long-term kind of separation that was planned to come back eventually all along?
Oh, no. I think they're just... This is just a tease. Well, I'd be surprised if it was more than just a little bit of a tease. I think Oliver... I think they're nice together, but I don't think it works for the show or the team to have them linked up. So I hope that they've come to terms, so to speak, so that they're not so adversarial with each other at this point, and that it just moves forward from there. I don't deny part of me would like to have Felicity back, but I don't think the show works as well.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that, it's one of those situations where when you have the, it was better when there was the unresolved tension between them than when, you finally get there. It just became complicated when you had the two of them in an overt relationship, because really the only way to play it from there was to introduce conflict. And I guess It was just, I was kind of thinking to myself, are they going to have learned something? Are they going to have kind of come back after all of this and said, okay, now we know how to deal with each other because of all that we've been through? But yeah, that might have been just even my own kind of Felicity side coming out and saying, come on, give them something.
No, it is nice, but I just don't see it working. And honestly, I like the team to be together and not at odds with each other. I mean, I know tension can make for good storylines. I get that. But at the same time, I love when just the rest of the world is going, crazy, and the team can actually rely on themselves and their relationships to help at least give them a base from which to move forward to attack all the insanity going on. Mm-hmm. I don't so much like the internal dissent amongst our team, whether it be Arrow 1 or 2.
1.0 or 2.0, yeah, yes. Absolutely. I myself feel like, come on, guys, it works better when you are actually a combined team, a unified team. That's the word I was really looking for. That would work so much better if they could get to that point. Because, yeah, they did experiment pretty well with them being at odds with each other, but it just... works better when, like you said, they can deal with external threats rather than constantly dealing with internal strife. That brings us to our number one show for the week, and this one is courtesy of Edmund. This would be Better Call Saul, Season 3, Episode 5, Chicanery. Kim and Jimmy face off with an unforgiving adversary, and he gave this one a perfect 10. Way to be a ringer here, man. The focus. This is Edmund's comments. We'll just go ahead and read them out. The focus is all on Jimmy as he and Kim battle Chuck at Jimmy's disbarment hearing, and it is glorious. Chuck finally gets his comeuppance in a fashion that is both cathartic and heartbreakingly well played, both in its specific machinations and in the magnificent performances. Michael McCain gets a standout send-off, presumably hard to see the two brothers ever reconciling after this, and Jimmy gets to move on and continue his journey towards becoming Saul Goodman and Walter White's lawyer. So yeah, sounds like this was a really super strong episode of Better Call Saul as it came in at a perfect 10 from Edmund. So,
And he doesn't give those lightly, so.
True. Very true. And yes, let's see. That is our number one show for the week then. Why did it just do that to me? Sorry, my browser did something weird. But Gary, as you look down this list at the other shows that are on the list, what catches your eye?
I guess it definitely wasn't the best show of the week, but I would like to talk it out. Maybe I'm not seeing something. I'd like to talk about this week's episode of Doctor Who.
Okay, something tells me that we are all not seeing or seeing the same thing, but as we all gave it roughly the same score. Doctor Who, Series 10, Episode 4, Knock Knock. A sinister landlord shows Bill and her friends a seemingly perfect house share, but things are not as perfect as they seem. This is Doctor Who, after all, right?
Yes.
This one came in at an average of 7.5, so not too far from the bottom three. And, well, I'll go ahead and let Edmund give his comments here. He says, this season still feels like they're going down a checklist of Doctor Who episode types. This week, ghost story with a twist. And the mystery of the vault is getting tedious. Moffat in navel-gazing mode. I've been seeing interweb speculation. Man, Edmund.
Jeez.
Hitting it right on the nose, I think, though.
I got a picture of Moffat without his shirt on when Edmund said that.
Oh, no.
I'm not happy about it either.
I need a moment.
I'll talk while you're... Yeah, I don't blame you. Brain bleaches on the left. Again, I like Doctor Who stories where the Doctor in his reincarnation, or whoever he is, the actual his type of Doctor, for is showing off either something about that actor playing that Doctor that stands out. It's different from what we've seen before, or it's unique, or at least in that style. This Doctor in this episode, as critical as I am of Capaldi, he had no chance in this episode. There was nothing for the Doctor to shine through at all in any unique way. You could have put a Dalek in there. I'm trying to think if he even used a sonic screwdriver once. I don't think I saw that. The Doctor could have easily have been out of this whole episode and still not have been of any real use. Bill could have just talked to the ghost, the woman, I guess, yeah, woman, I'll say, well, a woman that was trapped in the house and talked her way out of it herself. You didn't need the Doctor. And if you don't need the Doctor, then it's really not a Doctor Who story for me. And I don't mind them revisiting this ghost/haunted house kind of that captures people trope. I'll admit it is a trope for the series, but they do put tiny fresh spins on it. And I thought this the bug spin that was on this one was well done, and I didn't mind it that much. Again, what I minded was no real Doctor in this episode for at least for my opinion. And number two, Bill has five roommates now and all of a sudden needs a flat to stay in. And where did that come from? And I didn't even know she needed roommates. And who are these people? And why should I even care if they get sucked into the walls in the first place? I didn't get any of that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't care either.
Poor character, no character development. Other than the novel twist in the the ghost house concept, really not much else. And I don't know what would make me say that this was a Doctor Who episode. It didn't feel like it at all.
Yeah, I can't disagree. I've been writing up reviews for Doctor Who on the VOG Network page, and I literally could not find anything to really say about this episode. It felt like the characters that were supposedly Bill's friends, it didn't feel like they knew each other very well. They didn't feel like, you know, lived in, like a lived in group of people that knew each other and interacted very often. I was given really no reason to care for them. And beyond that, I feel like it was just the format of the episode was kind of strange. For the most part, it was playing out like a horror story. Okay. Even right down to the people that you barely know that are getting killed. And then in the final act, it turned into this, you know, Doctor Who-esque mystery about what's really going on in the house type of thing. It's like, well, it would have maybe even played better if you just kept it as a horror story. You know, the doctor helps them survive or something. But like you said, the doctor almost had nothing to do with this episode. I think we were supposed to learn more about Bill. But I still
really?
Don't feel like I learned anything about her. I don't know. I'm guessing that's why you tell us about her roommates, but I didn't really get a feel for her at all, or feel for any of them. So I agree with you. It was a nice enough episode, but it didn't really, like, knock it out of the park. We've gotten four episodes into this series, and I'm not feeling it very well right now. It feels like marking time. That's what I said last time, too. Unfortunately.
No, yeah. No.
It boggles my mind as well that there are people who think that this is the best season that Capaldi has had. I can't fathom it. But
I'll admit I'm very critical of him, but this is certainly by no means his best work.
No, well, not just his, but I mean just this season of the show with him at the... They're not giving him much to do. What they are giving him is somewhat contradictory at times, and I just don't feel the connection to Bill. I don't feel it between her and the doctor, and I don't feel it as an audience member. And I'm not sure why. We've had plenty of companions, and I've never really had this kind of just absolute... just...
apathy?
Yeah, complete apathy. It's very strange. The closest that I've come to this was kind of being very... At least for a good part of her run, Donna just wasn't working for me because she was so obstinate and hostile that it didn't give me anything to really sink my teeth into from a sympathetic point of view until later in her story. But this is just kind of like lifeless to me almost. It's very strange. Very strange. Maybe Moffat, knowing that he's on the way out, just is lowballing it this time or something. I don't know. What I'd like to do is, I know that it's not a show that you're watching, but I did want to at least touch on it here, because it is getting pretty good start, is American Gods, Season 1, Episode 2, The Secret of Spoon. Mr. Wednesday recruits for the coming battle, and Shadow Moon travels with him to Chicago, where he engages in a very high-stakes game of checkers with an old Slavic god. And this one came in at an average of 9. Nadim gave it a 9, saying, an even stronger episode than the pilot. American Gods is off to a very solid start. Excellent. Edmund gives his comment saying, the book was partially inspired by Gaiman's move to America and fascination with the classic American road trip. With the show on the road, things are picking up, and the casting is inspired as it looked on paper, especially Gillian Anderson's introduction as Lucy / Media, and Peter Starmore? I can never get that one right. And Cloris Leachman as, yeah, those characters whose names I can't pronounce. Yeah, he even puts right in here, sorry, John, couldn't resist giving you a pronunciation challenge. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Edmund. Who knew checkers could be so tense? Yeah, that was one hell of a final scene. Also, an inspired Coming to America cold open that felt like a twisted take on Black Sails. This is not a show for the meek, or the easily offended, for that matter. This is a really interesting and deep show that goes into some very unusual and mature territory, to say the least. And yet, it is, at least so far for me, completely in spirit with the novel upon which it is based. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying American Gods quite a lot. Gary, any other show here on the list that you wanted
to? Oh, just as a side note, John, I haven't started watching American Gods yet, but is it keeping to the book?
Pretty well.
Okay.
It's clearly making some changes in order for the format and
yes.
the media, but otherwise, the spirit is very much intact.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. And also, it is definitely not family viewing.
I didn't expect it to be. No.
Anything else here on the list that you wanted to dig into?
I would like to not pick on any show too much. And I think we've made enough references to Iron Fist this week. So I will switch over and say, I believe one of the few shows that we both saw together that we could reasonably discuss would be The Flash.
Okay, that certainly works. The Flash, Season 3, Episode 21, Cause and Effect. Barry takes drastic measures to stop Savitar. Yeah, this one came in at an average of 8.25, which is actually a pretty nice jump for The Flash after having some really just strangely weak back season for the third season, or a back run of episodes anyway. Gary, what was it about this that you liked? Because you gave this an 8, so you obviously liked it.
I'm using these names correctly. I enjoyed having Caitlin back, even if it was just for a few short minutes. That was nice, and geez, it felt like they were getting through to her. I'll recall him Happy Barry, was really nice, and how Iris was saying, you know, geez, I've never seen him without this, you know, this weight on him, whether it's his mother or his father, or, you know, me getting killed or screwing up the timeline, or, you know, all this stuff that Barry always carries around with him, no pun intended, you know, and to see him freed of it and happy and go lucky. And, you know, that was it's interesting. Barry's always sort of burdened by problems, but I think I got a sense that of how much heavier those are for him to deal with when I see the lightness with which not remembering any of it portrays himself. I even honestly think I have to sort of go look back as how the actor is playing the role with this sort of better understanding of all these burdens that are upon him. I don't say it'll completely change my view of the character, but it's definitely going to make me look at him a little bit different now. So I thought that was interesting. I also thought it was interesting that Savitar lost the memories, even though he's from the future, when Barry got them restored in the past. And I don't quite understand how that worked.
Yeah, it was a little odd, to say the least.
I have a few different theories of time travel that I've, you know, picked up from either comic books or novels and the such over the years, and I'm still trying to understand that one.
Well, I mean, the problem is that time travel and the effects of time travel on The Flash. Remember that there was an entire conversation that Barry had with HR where basically they were agreeing about rules of time travel that were flatly in contradiction to the first two seasons of the show. So, yeah, it is really kind of odd, to say the least. And yeah, it's not easy to kind of grasp. I think that this episode in particular worked really well if you just kind of left all that alone.
Yes, I agree.
Focused entirely on the fact that, yeah, this was, it was basically filler when you think about where they are in the season and the fact that they should be doing a lot of other things. I feel like this was the episode that they added when they found out they had 23 instead of 22. it just feels like, wow, there wasn't a whole lot there. And a lot of it was just delaying tactic more than anything. But I feel like it was, as you said, really interesting to see Barry not burdened by everything that's happened to him. There were some really funny moments in this episode. And it's been a while since we had a genuinely funny episode of The Flash. Yeah. It's always so laden with what's going on with, you know, trying to prevent Iris from dying and all of that.
Yes.
And this was a nice return to a previous form. So an 8.25, a really good score for The Flash lately, I have to say. Yep. What I think I'm going to go ahead and do, as we are kind of getting a little bit longer on this episode, is wrap this one up if you had any objections.
No, I just wanted to mention one thing that I didn't mention when we were talking about Supergirl. There was a scene where Wynn was in the DEO and he was singing I'm Your Super Friend.
Yeah.
from the musical. I thought that was a nice little throw in there for it. That was fun. Yeah. So that was it then.
All right. Let's see. Let's go down the list of the shows that we didn't cover. We have The Handmaid's Tale, Season 1, Episode 2, Birthday. That comes in at a 9, and boy, is that some of the most uncomfortable, necessary viewing that you will ever have. Not a show for the faint of heart. There's also The 100, Season 4, Episode 10, Die All, Die Merrily, which was basically the 100's version of The Hunger Games, and it worked out really well from a narrative point of view. Riverdale, Season 1, Episode 12, Anatomy of a Murder, came in also at a 9. This was the episode that revealed the killer of Jason Blossom. Yes, it's actually a pretty solid episode, to say the least, since it got a 9. Coming in at an 8.75, we have The Americans, Season 5, Episode 10, Dark Room, which was a bit of a game-changer episode. We have Sense8, Season 2, Episode 2, Who Am I?, which came in at an average of 8.25. The Leftovers, Season 3, Episode 5, G'day Melbourne. Where's Barnstone when I need him? Anyway, that came in at an average of 8.25. The Originals, Season 4, Episode 7, High Water and a Devil's Daughter, came in at an 8. Into the Badlands, Season 2, Episode 8, Sting of the Scorpion's Tail, came in at an 8. Outcast, Season 2, Episode 6, Fireflies, also came in at an 8, as did iZombie, Season 3, Episode 6, Some Like It Hot Mess. Supernatural, Season 12, Episode 20, Twigs and Twins and Tasha Baines, came in at 7.5. Prison Break, Season 5, Episode 6, Fascia, came in at 7.5. And finally, Iron Fist, Season 1, Episode 8, The Blessing of Many Fractures, came in at an average of 7.25. So that's it for the discussion of the episodes from the past week, and that is also it for this week of The Critical Myth. Gary, do you have any last thoughts for this week?
I was thrilled by some of the renewal announcements. I think generally our shows are trending higher, which I'm not sure if that's indicative of just later in the season, so they've had enough time to develop, or they're actually just real quality. So I will go with a positive and say they're just real quality.
Yeah, a lot of these shows actually are really coming out of the gate strong, so it's good to see. Or they're, you know, conversely ending on a really high note, which is always good to see. But yes, we will be back next time with, as we mentioned, we're in the middle of kind of shows wrapping up their seasons, and we have a lot of season finales taking place, so yeah, we're definitely going to be digging into that next time. So next week, we will see what winds up at the bottom and what winds up at the top. So until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.